Okay, so I will talk to you about something we worked on with all those people. So Stefano, which is in Brussels, Antonio Assin from Barcelona, Yang Cheng and Nicolas are in Geneva now, and Valerio is in Singapore. And so the subject of the talk will be quantum non-locality, finite speed inference models, and superliminal signaling, and how that all goes together. But so before really starting into the subject, I'd like to just remind what is the overall scope of what we are talking about here. Let's see if that works. Maybe I need Well, I'll do it by hand. Okay. So, well, a long time ago, Einstein and others started, well, made a big step, right, in physics, and with by introducing the theory of relativity. And well, this theory says many things, and one important thing is that, in principle, nothing can. Well, there's a like a maximum speed in nature, and which is the speed of light, or maybe the speed of neutrinos. I don't know. And nothing can go faster than that, in principle. Right? And a few years later came quantum mechanics, which is more comes about description of different systems like atoms, etc. And which was formalized. And well, despite being a very different theory a priori, well, it could be somehow unified with a quantum field theory, right, in the same years. But somehow this was not really helping because a few years later, Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen, they well, basically put up an argument to say that they were not happy with the situation, right? And well, basically saying that there's something fishy here with quantum mechanics. And this was formalized later by John Bell and in his theorem, where this this problem is really shown up rigorously. And in more details. So it basically says that, well, you don't really understand quantum mechanics in the light of special relativity. So okay, let me first, okay, I'll start by just recalling what I mean here by Bell theorem. And so we consider, so I'll just introduce, okay, local hidden variable. I'm sure most of you know about it. So if you have two regions of space which are very separated in priori, well, we can call one of these A and the other B, right? And well, each part could hold some information, and they could also hold some shared information, which is here denoted by this lambda. And but we take them separated enough, right? And well, in principle, we can interact with those regions and make measurements. So for instance, on Alice, we can say, oh, let me do this measurement, which I label by X. And then by observing the system, we can get some outcome, which we label by A, right? And we can do the same at Bob's side with get some measurement Y, and we get some result B. And this, in principle, can be done even if A and B are very far, right? And one can imagine that that's some operator here which measures system B just records all those events and keep them in memory. And sometime later, maybe he will meet the guy which was interacting with A, and they can compare their results. And by comparing the results, they can compute this probability, which is just describing what was with what how often did the outcomes A and B were observed when measurement X and Y were taken on the systems. And if we assume that really those two regions are separated, then it's natural to say that A must be a function of lambda and X, right? And B must be a function of lambda Y. Maybe some also B can be also a function of some other variables, but which would be unrelated to Alice. And so in this case, we have that the correlation must be of this form, right? So that's the separability condition, say. I refer to that in these words. And we know that any correlations which hold such a decomposition, they must satisfy Bell inequalities. Okay, so maybe you can ask why do we want really this separability condition to hold in practice? And well, basically the biggest reason is because of relativity. Because okay, so let's imagine that we do actually this measurement that we just described in space-time, and that A is measured at this event and B is measured here, right? So, okay, now we can, in this situation, we can look at what are the, where the light cones are. And the light cones, according to relativity, will tell us, okay, what can, where the information can flow and what can be influenced. And we see that, for instance, here, B lies outside of the future light cone of A, for instance. So meaning that, well, we don't expect any information to travel from A to B. And similarly, we don't expect any information to travel from B to A. Right? So that's exactly the condition we used before. But nevertheless, even if we here we have events which are space-like separated, well, we can still understand that by measuring in this situation, maybe the result of A and B are correlated. And there's an easy explanation for that is because maybe there's just a common cause that will just tell Alice and Bob to output things in a correlated manner or maybe anti-correlated manner. And so this would be like the source of the lambda that I wrote before. So somehow we have this intuition that if nothing can go faster than light, then if we observe some correlation, then they must have been prepared beforehand. And that's and so we must have Bell inequalities. Now, the thing is that quantum mechanics predicts a violation of Bell inequalities, and experiments tend to confirm that as well. So what does it mean exactly to have that the Bell inequality be violated? Well, according to what we just discussed, it means that the quantum correlations, they cannot be explained by a common cause in the past that would kind of prepare those correlations. And when the measurements are made in a space-like setup, well, then we expect that no influence propagating between the two parties with a speed lower than the speed of light can also explain those correlations. So, well, we still have those correlations, so how do we explain them? And how can we understand that those correlations show up in practice? So one solution for that is to consider superluminal influences. So it's even okay if A and B are space-like separated, maybe there's some signal or something which we here call an influence, which will travel from A to B. And well, if we imagine something like that, then actually all experiments can be explained according to that. But because in all experiments, measurements are never made exactly at the same time. So by just choosing influences which can propagate fast enough, well, we can explain those correlations. And yeah, but still, okay, this is a kind of a bit a strange idea, right? But it can be formalized if we use, for instance, a preferred reference frame. So if we say that there is a preferred reference frame, then it makes sense to consider fast. Well, it can be, we can define faster than light speeds, right? Outside of this frame, well, it becomes difficult because of Lorentz transformation. Right? And no, no, we still want to be in, to fit with relativity, right?
So does it appear in your results somehow, or is it just something that you want?
Well, we don't want to consider a model which is in direct contradiction with relativity, right? Because
sure.
Somehow this would be. Now, if it's really shows up, I don't know if it really shows up.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you can tell me if you see.
Okay.
It. But right.
So are you positing a rest frame, sort of an absolute rest frame, but somehow we don't come to learn what it is? Is that?
Well, yeah. Or maybe we could learn it. Maybe we could learn what it is, but maybe at the moment we don't. Right.
If we did come to learn it, then presumably special relativity would not be true. So
why
would special relativity not be true if we learn?
Yeah.
Yep, the rest frame? Well, then I guess, I mean, the physics would be different in different frames if we had some way of identifying whether, you know, a given frame was the rest frame.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So indeed, I mean, this somehow contradicts the principle of relativity. But it's not clear that it really contradicts, for instance, the experiments which led to postulate relativity. So
Well, it better not conflict with known experiments.
Sorry?
Well, it better not conflict with experiments that have been performed.
Yes.
Unless we're going to suggest that people actually made a mistake and Michelson and Morley didn't do their experiment properly.
Yeah, yeah. So we don't want to contradict known experiments, right? But
with the exception of the Opera experiment. no one wants to talk about it.
Okay. So we'll have to come
it's still an experiment. You may not believe it, but it's an experiment.
Yeah. I mean, I don't contradict it.
For neutrinos.
Yeah.
So we're sitting in a gray zone at the point until they do the experiment again.
Mm-hmm.
Next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. If you have a double light cone structure in the Kalski spacetime, you have to violate the Lorentz invariance.
Well, so the point is, I mean, I don't want to say that all the physics is only defined in one reference frame. So all the laws of physics that are Lorentz invariant, I just want to keep them real. Or we can keep them Lorentz invariant, right? But maybe there's nothing at the moment that can really forbid us to imagine another process that would be independent of those, and that would require us, or that would take place in a special frame. That's everything I want to say about that. It's not. It doesn't go into contradiction with all the physics we know. But I mean, it's not forbidden to think about it.
Once you do this, top of light cone.
Yeah.
Then you can always choose an observer so that you begin to get closed loops. And you can start violating causality. And you can visit your dead grandfather.
So, well, I would say if you do that only in one frame, so if those speeds are defined, indeed, I mean, if you can define faster than light speeds for all, I mean, independently of the frame, then in some frames they will look like going back to the past, right? But if it's defined only in one frame, this speed, then I think you can avoid those problems.
You have a preferred frame, so you can always choose one so that you can keep going backwards.
Yeah, but the preference frame.
We can talk about this.
Yeah, sure. Okay. All right, and I mean, okay, let me just mention that actually, if you think about Bohmian mechanics or even the GRW collapse model, those two are, if you want, physical theories which require a preferred reference frame and which we have no evidence against at the moment. So that's just to say, okay, that's an assumption that we use here. Maybe we don't even need it, but that's just to make things clear. Okay. So now, but okay, still, okay, maybe we want to allow that, but we don't want to go too much against relativity because we still want to be compatible with relativity. So one thing that we don't want to accept maybe is to go against the no signaling principle. So here I want to say that, meaning that maybe some influences go faster than light, but somehow in the correlations that we observed in the lab, well, here we still want to have that the no signaling condition holds. Otherwise, we would have faster than light signalings that could be exploited. And in principle, that could be the case, right? And right. And so this idea, we can look at, I mean, some experiments were made. You see, every time you make an experiment with space-like separation, and you observed non-local correlation, this puts a lower bound on the speed of this hypothetical influence. So some experiments, according to those experiments here, well, this speed must be of the order of 10,000 times the speed of light. So OK, now I'd like just to introduce really the models that we want to talk about more carefully. And so for this, I really only sit now in the preferred reference frame. And so if we consider an event A taking place here, well, we know we can define its past and future V cone, light cone, sorry. And of course, now introducing a new velocity, V, we can define as well some V cones in this reference frame. So those cones, if you look in another reference frame, they will look squeezed. Or skewed somehow. And this, we take it as a definition of what can be influenced by what. So for instance, this event can influence anything happening in this future V cone. So for instance, even this event, which is outside its light cone, could in principle, what happened here could depend on what happened here. We allow for that. And also this can depend on what happened in its past V cone. But however, everything which is outside this V cone must be still totally, well, cannot depend on what happens at A. So, and yeah, and for this, we want also maybe to consider speeds V which are finite, right? Because if we take V goes to infinity, well, then we can influence everything, then we also lose the notion of. Propagation and of continuity, basically. And okay, just to summarize, event can depend only on what is in his past V cone. So, well, specifically, if we have that A can influence B, because then we can write the correlations that will be produced by a V causal model. Like that, right? So this is just in general, where lambda is just some whatever is important and belongs to the past. And okay, this is just using the chain rule. So I just decompose the marginal and the joint term. And now, using the fact that the input of Bob is not in the past V cone of Alice, well, we know that whatever happens at Alice cannot depend on Y. So we must remove this term, right? Whereas Bob, well, what happened at Bob can depend on everything that happened to Alice because it in its past. So capital lambda is like the region where this lambda belongs, if you want. So if you want, lambda is this region, and small lambda is like everything that is meaningful for the experiment and that belongs to this region. And
the region is the last V causal cone of A.
Yeah, okay. What is here will not help. Well, will not come for Alice.
So capital lambda would be this, be the last V cone of A.
Well, but for it could help for Bob, right?
Huh.
But it's just, I mean, just an upper bar. But indeed, I mean, Alice, in principle, yeah, cannot use what is outside of class vehicle. And okay, and in this situation, well, because we have anything like that can be reproduced by the model, well, any no signaling correlation, bipartite correlation, can also be reproduced by a model here, just because the marginal of Alice is well defined, so we can always write such a model for any signaling correlation. So now, if we go to the other situation where A and B are outside each other's vehicle, then we are in a situation like that. And okay, we can write the same decomposition, but this time, I mean, this time Alice, well, whatever happens here cannot depend on the input of Bob, right?
No.
On its output. So it can only depend on this lambda. And here we take this lambda, this region here, lambda. I mean, we could take all the past actually, but it's enough in principle just to use that. So that we have this decomposition. And this is exactly the separability condition. So in this situation, the model is restricted to only produce local correlation. So somehow, if you want, you can see these v-causal models as just a generalization of Bell's notion of local causality, where you, instead of allowing for C-cones, inferences within the C-cones, you also allow for more general cones. So this defines somehow the resources that we allow the model to use. Now we need to say how does the model relate to quantum mechanics or to quantum correlations. And so what we'll do is to ask for this. We'll just ask that whenever a chain of influence can propagate through all parties, then we want that the model reproduces the quantum correlations, right? Because somehow if a model for some quantum correlation doesn't reproduce the correlation it's supposed to reproduce in this situation, then there's no reason really to call it a model for quantum correlations, right? So when we have this time ordering, then we want that the correlation created by the model be the quantum correlations. And when this is not the case, meaning when maybe some parties, if D was a bit lower, then maybe no inference could propagate here. And well, in this situation, we don't say anything. Maybe the sum correlation will not be quantum anymore. This depends on the possibility of the model, right? But at least when the full chain of inference can propagate through the parties, then we want the model to produce the quantum correlations. Yes?
The set of correlations that are possible within this model, regardless of the causal structure of those events. Because if you said, you know, okay, C and D are separated in such a way that, you know, there's no causal influence that can propagate, then that places a constraint on the sorts of correlations you can see between C and D.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just puzzled as to why you say we say nothing about those scenarios.
Okay. So it will be constrained, just like you said, somehow. So since it will be constrained, we don't require the model to produce the quantum correlation, because somehow we accept that the model be constrained in this situation.
Since you already know that it will not.
Yeah, in general, yeah. For instance, if you want to produce some correlation which are non-local between those two parties, then you know it will not reproduce. It will not be able to reproduce it. So.
Right.
So this we accept.
So these are the only causal structures that have some hope of reproducing the quantum correlation. That's the idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we just say, if you want this model to make sense for quantum correlation, at least in this situation, it should reproduce the quantum correlation. OK. So, yes?
Well, see, I'm looking at your influences here, and you know, saying A influences B, which influences C, and so on. But actually, A can influence C directly,
yes,
can influence
yes.
D directly. So you've got all of this whole network of influences.
Yeah, indeed. But I mean, but we just want that such a chain exists, right? You can have more influences, but if the chain exists, then we want to produce quantum correlation. Okay, so now with this, well, we can let's look at the particular configuration. Which is a, so now we consider this situation where, okay, which is a four-partite experiment with this particular time order. So A can influence D, it can also influence B and C, right? D can influence B and C, but B and C are lie outside each other, light cone. So the question is here, of course, so we accept that B and C cannot be non-local here a priori, right? But we still want to know what can be said about the model in this situation. And so what we'll show is that, or what I mentioned, is that indeed the BC correlation will be local, even given what happened at A and D. And that the ABD and the ACD margins, so which are those ones and these ones, those they still need to be quantum, even though B and C measure outside each other's vehicle. So okay, the first part. So okay, well, let's just write the correlation that the model will produce in this situation. So here, okay, it's some region big lambda, right? So first, Alice measures. So what she measures can depend on some lambda and on her input only. And then Dave measures. And Dave can measure also according to his input and lambda. And but he can also use whatever happened at Alice to produce your output. And now later, BNC measure. And so we just introduced this region M here for here, because somehow this region, whatever is in here, already contains, well, it screens off all the past. So we can introduce a new variable, U, which can depend on A and everything, on all the other input and output, as well as on the lambda. And then we only need to use this mu, right? And here we have the separability condition. So B can only depend on Y and mu, and C can only depend on Z and mu, that's it. And so what we can, using this decomposition, well, it's easy to compute what is the BC correlation, the correlation between B and C conditioned on everything that happened before. So conditioned on the input of Bob and Charlie, and also on the input and output of Alice and Dave. So which is what I mean here by this notation. And OK, so this is just this ratio. And we can see that it can always be decomposed like that for some Q-tilde. And this is, again, just the separability condition, right? So in other words, all the correlations that a vehicle or model will produce in this situation, well, will satisfy this decomposition for the BC marginal condition A and D. Now, okay, we want to see what the ABD marginal look like in this situation. And so for this, I introduce a new, another, like an alternate experiment, which is this T, where C actually delays his measurement later to C prime. And you see now, if C measures here instead of here, well, you can have a chain of influence going through all parties, going like A to D to B to C prime. So in other words, in the configuration T here, the correlations that are created by the model must be the quantum ones. t equals pq. But somehow, I mean, the choice of Charlie delaying his measurement or not, this does not belong to the past V cone of A, D, and B. So you see that in case that C chooses not to delay his measurement, A, B, and D must behave the same way. So that this marginal must be equal to the one for the time order in T. And since this must be quantum, then the ABD marginal here must be quantum as well. Yes?
In that argument, you say if a set of things are all causally connected, then they can generate the quantum correlation. So couldn't you just say, look, A, B, and D are causally connected, therefore they can generate the quantum correlations?
Well, it's just because you could indeed choose this definition. But I mean, the definition we chose was when a chain goes through all parties which are involved. So if you have a chain going through A, B, D, I mean, well, you don't know what happens to C because it's not in the chain. And it's also a party which is playing the game here. So you don't have a chain going through all parties. I mean, you could also define maybe the model to reproduce quantum correlations whenever there's a chain between even parts of the parties, right? But we just define it for when we know what the model will do when the chain goes through all parties. Otherwise, we didn't want to say it. Just to be more general.
What troubles me about that definition is, so first of all, it seems to me it's not necessary. Like, you know, if you're going to ignore C, it should be, you should have a definition just that treats A, D, and B alone. And what worries me if you demand that it goes through all is, you know, that there's some further event E that I haven't told you about yet. So maybe you can't be sure that you can generate quantum correlations on A, B, C, D, because there's this other event E that I haven't told you about, and maybe that influences your ability to generate those correlations.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is more a theoretical definition. But you could imagine that E actually measures waves later, right? Maybe there are a thousand other parties which are also in the game, but you can just imagine, okay, well, the case where these parties measure here, and then all the other measure later, right? And so you can imagine a chain in this case. But I mean, I can tell you more if you want why we chose this definition.
What is R, subscript R, in the last equation?
Oh yeah, R is just referring to here, to disordering.
Ah, okay.
So it's just this situation where B and C measures outside each other's equal.
Okay. Which is a situation which, however, you are not describing with the model. I'm also a little bit confused by the fact that before you said that you don't use this model to produce quantum correlations when there are systems that are like space-like separated.
Yes.
And in R, you actually have that.
Yes. So that's why a priori we don't know if the ABD correlation must be quantum.
Mm-hmm.
But by using this argument, well, we see that it must necessarily be the case. Right? That's why I didn't say ABD is clearly quantum.
Mm-hmm.
I just need this argument. Maybe you can see it differently, but it's not given a priori.
But how do you say that so why the probability should be the same if you delay or if you don't delay the measurement of C?
Well, because the choice, if you want the decision of delaying the measurement or not, for Charlie, this decision can be taken here.
Mm-hmm.
And this point is outside the past V cone of A, D, and B.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever A, D, and B do cannot depend on this choice by definition of the model.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. And now you could also imagine maybe a situation T prime where you delay the measurement of Bob, and then you see that the ACD correlation must be also quantum. So just to summarize, here we have a situation where we could say that, okay, we have those two conditions which are always satisfied by a V-model for some quantum correlation, which is that those correlations are local, and the ABD and ACD correlations are produced according to the quantum prediction. So now, we want to use this lemma, which applies to this situation, because, well, which is of interest here, because it applies to a situation where the marginal BC condition on AND is local. And so here it's a, okay, so we say that if we have a four-parallel scenario with, we consider only binary inputs and outputs, two possible measurement settings and two possible outputs, then the BC given AD marginal is local and the correlations are no signaling, then we must have this inequality. This inequality is hold, right? Well, this is just the expression. And so B is, if you want, the all those are like the expectation value operators for the measurement of each party. And well, I mean, in order to, I'll just give you, how much time we have? Okay, I'll just give you a sketch of the proof, the idea, if you want. So the idea is just to rewrite the inequality in order to prove it by using the no-signaling conditions. So the no-signaling condition leave us some room to write the inequality in different ways. And so we can, for instance, see that S, although this change can be written in this form. And then, okay, so all of these terms, clearly, they must be positive. All of those terms here, just by positivity of the probabilities, right? And then we are left with those four terms, which are, you see, for the marginal correlation of B and C condition to on A and D. And these four terms, actually, they are just the CHSH inequality for B and C, which is lifted in the four-parallel scenario, if you want. And so we see that, and the inequality is that this must be larger than zero. So we see that in order to prove this inequality, we really only need those two assumptions, no signaling, and that those correlations be local, so they satisfy CHSH. Okay, and the point, of course, is that this inequality can be violated. So we can achieve 7.3 about by measuring qubits. And so, okay, so let's see what that means, right? So of course, one hypothesis must be wrong in the lemma. So for instance, it could be that the first hypothesis is wrong when we find this, when we observe this violation. And meaning that this correlation is actually non-local, variable inequality. And well, let me just come back to the expression. Here you can see, I mean, you can check in the expression that there's no term which involves B and C at the same time. So it only involves like A, B, C, D, A, B, D, A, C, D terms. There's no B and C at the same time. So somehow, if you violate the inequality, and you find that this is non-local, then it means that you have shown non-locality between B and C, but without really measuring it. You only measured complementary correlations, right? So this goes in the line of what was described in this paper, which they term transitivity of non-locality. So you can show non-locality between some parties without really measuring them, but by measuring complementary correlations. So this is one possibility. And of course, that's what happens for quantum correlations, because quantum correlations are no signaling. And the other possibility is that, well, the correlations that are responsible for the violation are signaling. And okay, so yeah, I mentioned that the inequality only involves those two terms, right? But now for the v-causal model, if you remember, we had that those two correlations in the scenario where B and C are outside each other. Well, those two correlations were quantum, right? And those are the only correlations that appear in S. So in other words, if it's possible to find a quantum violation, then the model must also violate the inequality. But so the other characteristic of the model in this situation was that actually the BC given AD correlations were local. So this cannot be true. So we must have the other conclusion, right? So in this situation, yeah.
In ACD correlations, when you did the proof sketch,
yes,
there was clearly some BC given AD correlations in there. So what does it mean by S? What do you mean by that statement?
So I mean exactly this. I mean it's enough to measure only those terms to evaluate S. You can measure others if you want. It's enough to only measure those ones. And here you have no BC. You have only ABD, ACD, and I mean CD is also a subgroup of ACD.
Okay, so I guess on the next slide, you're just showing that in a model that fits your assumptions, you can relate the expectation value of S to correlations between B and C given A and D. But you don't need to measure any correlations between B and C given A and D to evaluate the expectation value of S.
Yeah, if you want. I mean, some of those terms you can measure, I mean, you can measure with the marginals plus the assumption of no signaling if you want. And you can evaluate some of those terms. Here somehow indeed you have the two factors which come into play. But you don't, if you want, you don't need to know what is the correlation between B and C in order to know what is the value of S. Okay. Yeah, and so we have a violation, and since by construction, the model is local for BC given AD, but we must have no signaling. Or we must have signaling in this situation.
So, do you mean there to be a lambda on your signaling condition?
Sorry?
Do you mean there should be a lambda on your signaling condition?
Lambda? Here, you mean?
Yeah.
No, this is really for the correlation as observed. So it's.
But that would be the point.
Well, I mean, the correlations that are inside that violate inequality. So when you have this, when you achieve this value quantum mechanically, indeed this is just the quantum.
And that one is.
And that one is not signaling because this one is not a problem. But when you achieve the same value with the model,
I see.
Then this cannot be right, so it must be the case here. That the correlation given by the model be signaling. And as you say, this is really just the correlations, and they are not conditioned on any lambda. They are really just correlations that can be observed, if you want, at the level of our present day description of quantum experiments. Okay, so now we just need to find out where is this signaling to do something interesting, right? So, just to recall this, so the signaling conditions here are just here, like that. Right? So for any subgroup here, like ABC, well, the ABC marginal cannot depend on the input of the last party. That's just what it says, right? And we have that for any subgroup. So we have three conditions of no signaling. But here you see, just by the same argument that we had before, you can argue that the ABD marginal cannot depend on Charlie's input because this is outside of their pass vehicle. So you cannot have any signaling from C to ABD by construction, right? And similarly, you cannot have any signaling from B to ACD. So ACD cannot depend on Y. So it must be one of the two remaining conditions which are violated, right? So either we have signaling from A to BCD or from D to ABC. And so here you can see, actually, but with the setup that we considered, I'm measuring A, D, and BC here, that actually it's possible to evaluate, for instance, the BCD margin outside of Alice Lyte cone. Because if you imagine that each party just broadcasts his input and output, then for instance, at this point, Dave could evaluate the BCD margin, right, using just a classical communication. So if the BCD correlation depends on A, then this can be used for faster than light signaling, right? And I mean, the opposite is also true, that if the signaling actually goes in the other possible direction, then you have a point here, A prime, which is outside of this future light cone, and which also can depend on Dave's choice of input, so that you can also have signaling. So if the correlations are signaling in either way, you can actually measure it. Okay, so this is on the conclusion. By speed inference lead to signaling. So with this, I will stop and just conclude by saying that so somehow we used only a few elements, right? We used quantum non-locality, no signaling, and the inferences. And so this is made basically the result, right? But if we don't want to lose quantum non-locality, and we also don't want to lose the no signaling condition, then inferences must go infinitely fast, right? It's not possible to have an explanation of those correlation with finite speed inferences. And so, well, then you can start to think what that means. I don't know. But somehow it means that, right, that the path changes must really affect the something that happens here, must in principle be able to affect the whole universe in order to avoid the possibility either to lose the non-local quantum correlation or to lose the no signaling. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Yes. So, I was wondering, can you go back to the lemma and later in your talk, you talk about how you had to either give up, you had to admit non-locality or a certain kind of signaling. And I want to see where that no signaling condition went into the derivation of the lemma.
Of the lemma, right?
Yeah.
So you have these expressions, eh? Which is just given, say?
Yeah.
And now you want to show that this inequality holds, right? This will show that S is smaller than 7. So in order to show this, one way to do is to rewrite this expression in these terms. But this is only possible if you assume that the correlations are no signaling. I mean, let me just write for instance. Because I mean, the no signaling correlations conditions. So they give you some freedom into how you can write inequalities or expressions. Because for instance, if you have, so say for a bipartite experiment, right? If you have A, B, even X, Y, but if you sum for instance on B, this gives in principle B of A given X, Y, right? But the no signaling principle tells you that this is this, it does not depend on y. So this is equal to that A given x1, right? So you have some condition. Sometimes if you can have some terms like that you can actually shift for terms like that. So this is the kind of freedom that that we use to rewrite the inequality in this term. And that's the only thing that we use. And once you have that, well, then you don't need the notion anymore. Just use positivity and the conditional locality.
The expectation value is in S.
Yes.
And you wrote like A sub naught in D sub 1. Those are
so yeah, okay, I didn't write it explicitly, but so for instance, so you have two possible inputs, right, and two possible outputs. So far, so basically AX, so the expectation value of that is the sum on the possible output, minus 1 to the A, P of A given X. Right, so the substrate is the input.
OK, that's clear enough. Thanks.
Welcome. You had a question?
I'm a bit confused about what's going on. In the standard picture, entanglement is just a purely quantum phenomenon. Special relativity is not affected. This is the party line. You're saying, so now you're taking into account the fact that according to Bell inequalities, you need non-locality in that picture. So if you have V greater than C, then you have two light cones. You can prove that you can only have T S squared equal to zero, which determines the cone.
Along the
only one cone can have T S squared equal to zero invariant.
Yeah.
Any other cone, T S squared equal to zero is not invariant.
Yeah.
Therefore you violate the Lorentzian range. You have to. So the question is whether you can do all this and be causal.
So indeed you violate the Lorentz invariant.
Yeah.
Because, so I wrote the cones, I wrote them like, well, I drew them like that, right? But if you look at those cones from a different reference frame, well, actually, some speed will become negative, right?
Well,
you broke Lorentz invariant.
Yeah, you broke Lorentz invariant, right?
Yeah, you have to. About 9 years ago, I published a paper in which I had a biometric relativity theory. And I worked all this out regarding Lorentz invariant. And I had correlations. I had two metrics. So one was a quantum metric, which got me outside the original light cone.
Mm-hmm.
The other metric is Mikulski or the usual G-mu of Einstein gravity.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when you work it out, you find that if you draw a perpendicular through the first light cone, you have an angle. And this angle shows how far you can push the second light cone out, like the first one. And if you go to pi over 4, the angle pi over 4,
mm-hmm.
you have the usual light cone. If you go to pi over 2, when angles greater than pi over 2, the speed of signaling information is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
But below an angle pi over 2 is finite.
Yeah. Okay.
And you can prove in that case you have to violate Lorentz invariance. So the question is, an experiment which disagrees with any of what I just said?
I'm not sure I understood everything, but I would be interested to actually look up the, if you have some references.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, so.
It gets down to experimental physics. Can you discuss an experiment which
would
disproves the no signaling correlation quantum mechanics as opposed to the V greater than C.
So that would, okay, we would. Well, like that, I don't know. You have an answer for that?
Well, maybe let me ask a question that's also related to experiment. Perhaps you can answer that. So you showed here that even if B and C were simultaneous relative to the preferred frame, you would still need a causal influence between them, therefore, for any finite velocity, you know, you can't explain the correlation. But now, if you wanted to go to the lab and prove this, well, you don't know what the preferred frame is, so you don't know how to make two events simultaneous relative to the preferred frame.
Yes.
So do you have an idea for trying to, you know, is there some clever way of being able to prove this conclusion despite not knowing what the preferred rest frame is? And when I say prove it, I just mean, you know, experimentally verify it.
Yeah, yeah.
Despite not knowing the preferred rest frame.
So, I mean, this is for sure, I mean, a subject of research, right? How is the best way to, how could we test something like that experimentally in the best way? What we know is that if you actually modify, just give a little bit more details on the definition of the model, which is basically what you said before, saying that if you have a subset of the parties which share some influence, then you also want that automatically to be quantum. Then if you do that, I think we had a setup which could be, and which, well, could be tested and which would work for any reference frame with, or maybe you need two experiments, I don't know, but like two measurements, a finite number, and would allow to scan all possible reference frames. But this is quite new. I mean, the experiments that I mentioned before that put a bound on 10,000 times the speed of light, those they also somehow scan all possible reference frames. And somehow, of course, they don't do that, but they use tricks. And so sometimes it's possible to do, actually, to give a conclusion for all possible reference frames without actually measuring in all possible reference frames.
So the fact that you have it all in terms of A, B, D, and A, C, D, that doesn't immediately help you. I thought that was the whole point of expressing it in terms only of those things.
Why would that help?
I don't know. Okay. But I was trying to work out is why, if I take the standard Bell correlations,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I could then show that no finite speed will work there by running over all the frame.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I get the right frame, I can see the measurements exactly simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I accept that theoretical argument, what do we gain by your
argument? And I thought it was something to do with this could be experiment. This was sort of easier to experiment. Well, actually, I mean, in order to measure all the terms, even if you have only a subset of terms, you still somehow need to measure everything. So that some terms, because you have like, I don't know, B1, D1 here, B1, beyond D0, well, I mean, basically, almost all combinations you need to measure them. But what can save you some trouble is that you just want to make sure in the experiment that enough influence can go through all parties, because you want that the model produces the quantum correlations. And somehow you have a lot of freedom here because that's almost automatically the case. When you do measurement at random, well, basically you will have influence that can go through all parties. And so for this, it's not too, at least.
What do you mean to?
I mean, if you, well, if you do some measurements in, say, like, even if you do it time ordered at the same position, then you have a, you know that for sure the correlation you will observe will be the quantum one, because you certify that there can be influence between them. Okay, then you have other problems because you should also do the experiment space like separated. But this is easier than to certify in the experiments that you do exact simultaneous that you have exact simultaneity between some events, because this would be difficult. So in order to do the experiment, you don't actually need to have simultaneity. So that's what. But I mean, okay, that's still a very, I mean, well, we could discuss about that, because it's
I mean, for me, the key is if you can do an experiment which rules out all the frame, which rules out that there's a finite speed influence in any frame.
Is that, you mean, is that what I
Well, that
mentioned?
To me, that's the key question. Right? And you're saying that's not so, or there isn't a proposal.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have some ideas to do that.
So can I just follow up? Do you agree with what Roger said? I mean, this seems like an important point. So if the goal is merely to show that quantum theory is not consistent with an underlying model wherein there's a preferred frame and there are velocities traveled at faster than the speed of light, then it seems to me Roger's right. It suffices to point out that you can get Bell correlations in any reference frame according to quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
Whereas if this model were true, there would be some frame in which you wouldn't get Bell correlations.
Yes.
So you agree that that would be enough to just achieve that conclusion.
Yeah, indeed. If you want just to rule out the model,
then
actually you can just violate a Bell inequality in all frames.
Okay.
Because
So would you say what this really adds is that you get closer to the possibility of an experimental demonstration without having to do the impossible of the experiment of going to all frames?
Okay.
And it's like, I mean, it's a difficult question, but
I think that the purpose here is a bit different. We don't really want to show that those models are impossible, but we rather want to say that, well, we must have that those models predict signaling. And this you cannot tell from the Bell inequality violation.
Can you say it again, those models?
That those models, they predict signaling.
Signal.
So that they allow for, I mean, when you have a Bell inequality violation, then okay, it shows that, okay, you cannot understand really where the correlations come from, but maybe the model, well, you don't know more, right? But here, what you could do actually, if you did an experiment, what it would tell rather than saying this model does not work, it would say if this model works, then it must be signaling. So you could somehow ask nature if it is signaling. That would be rather the conclusion of the experiment, I would say, which is quite different.
So
yes.
One experiment which I predicted is that you do an entanglement between the spacecraft and the Earth. In fact, such an experiment has been proposed by a group here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see any decrease in correlation, this of course is significant. Because in the standard picture, the correlation has the same strength whether you have entanglement on Andromeda, galaxy in here. So that's one possible experiment that's been proposed.
So
the other one is, I hate to say it again, but OPERA. They've repeated the experiment, and the problem is, if you look for a problem, it's not statistical. And the GPS is fine, so there's some simple reason why it's not correct. But let's say it is correct. Then it messes up modern physics, because it's really a very serious change.
But actually, I have a comment about this. Still, it is not clear to me where special relativity appears in these proofs. So here it seems to me that this is something that holds even before special relativity. If we had the quantum mechanics and the Galileo transformations, no bound, just finite speeds, this thing is, the argument is just the same, as Roger said.
Yeah, but, okay.
So where is special relativity? I agree that the OPERA would revolutionize physics, but I don't think it's particularly pertinent to this case, because this is actually independent of special relativity. We are saying that quantum correlations are instantaneous and cannot be explained by any.
Statement.
But this is the statement here.
Okay. So, for instance, indeed, if in the future we find that actually we can go twice as fast as light, or something like that, and that's the ultimate limit, or I don't know what, then we would still have the whole same trouble.
Sure.
Exactly. I mean, I guess the relativity was more in the motivation, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least, I think in Bell's work, it was very present that somehow we want to do things in agreement the most.
Since we are modern physicists, we believe in special relativity instead of Galilean, but the mathematical proof is about Galilean relativity.
So you're saying entanglement is independent of space-time?
Well, this is what we're saying here. But this is a result in even non-relativistic quantum mechanics.
Space-time doesn't come into it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But why does he have talk about V bigger than C? Why did you do that? You can't have your cake and eat it, you know, so to speak. Either you have it or you don't have it.
Well, okay, sorry if that troubled you. Well, because that's what Bell used, right? In local, the idea of local causality, and the reason why we do, well, we want to have a observe Bell violation in a space-like manner is with respect to the speed of light. It's not with respect to some other. So it's in relation to relativity. But okay, it's not related to gravitation or whatever.
Once you go to V greater than C, everything changes. You can't keep the standard quantum mechanical picture. I think you begin to bring in space time.
So this is just on the level of the hidden variable.
Yes.
That they only the hidden things go faster than the speed of light. So everything you see and all the experiments that you do, they still agree, or you at least you imagine for the purposes of these types of arguments that they still agree with the physics that we have. But there's something we don't know about, some hidden parameter, and we're asking: is behind the scenes somehow? Could the universe be using hidden path?
Once you do physics, you start hiding what you don't like. I don't like that.
You don't like that.
You have to face what happens and not start hiding it. Once you hide it, then you'll never be able to falsify it.
Yeah.
The idea is that it's the universe that could be hiding it, not the theorist. So you have to contend with the possibility that there could be superluminal influences that are nonetheless not controllable by us and not usable by us for the purpose of signaling. So that there are well-defined theories wherein, you know, that we see special relativity to be true in our experiments, but then nonetheless the ontological picture beneath it all has superluminal influences in it. So there's nothing anti-scientific about that, I don't think.
That's a matter of opinion.
Well,
I would suggest that maybe we conclude the informal part of the seminar and continue with the informal discussions with Jean Daniel. So let's thank him again.